Welcome to Listen Bitch Presents Tell Me Why You're Special. This is the arena where we don't just talk about making money, we talk about keeping it, growing it, protecting it, and building a life that is not controlled by financial fear. Because the truth is, most people spend their entire lives working for money without ever learning how money can work for them. They save, they invest, they follow conventional advice, yet somehow they still feel very uncertain about their future. So today we're going to talk about wealth and risk and legacy and financial freedom and why some of the strategies used by the wealthy are literally hiding in plain sight. Today's guest is Keith Friedman, founder and CEO of FBO Strategies. He's the creator of the Core Buy and Allocation Strategy and a financial services veteran who has spent more than 2 decades helping people think differently about protecting and growing wealth. Keith, thank you so much for coming into the hot seat today. After spending years in the financial industry, what was the moment that made you stop and say, "Wait a minute, why is nobody talking about this?"
So I had two. So the first one was 2008. And in 2008, we all, Brendan, honestly, you look a little young. I don't know how old you were in
Oh, I,
2008.
yep, we talk about it on the show a lot. It's
Okay. So in
2008.
2008, the world melted. I literally melted. And I was a traditional financial advisor. I was working for through a Guardian Life Insurance agency. And at that moment, I saw how the financial world melted, but life insurance carriers actually stood strong. Guardian at that moment actually increased their dividend rate, and so did, and the other mutual carriers held theirs strong. So it made me take a long, hard look at my business and the value that cash value life insurance was providing to my clients. So when I started my own firm, I actually decided to specialize in that. And I, in all honesty, puttered around in that for a long time. You know, I did great work for my clients, but I didn't have like a breakthrough moment. And a breakthrough moment came for me about 2 years ago. Another firm came to me. They were looking to hire me to help them run their life insurance group. And they asked me to prove the efficacy of life insurance, cash value life insurance for that matter. And so I did what I do and I built a spreadsheet. And I also thought deeply and hard about what cash value life insurance is. And we decided to focus on the areas that are fixed products. So these are not investments. There are life insurance products that have mutual funds built into them. We're not talking about those. It's not what we do. And when we looked at the fixed products, we really came to the conclusion that they had all the same attributes or most of the same attributes as conservative assets. And when you compare the performance of a properly structured cash value life insurance policy, and we could talk about that later, to other conservative assets, they significantly outperform them. And they also have other benefits as well. So when I came to that conclusion 2 years ago, I'm like, I need to start singing from the rooftop about this. So I built and I named it. It's called the carbine allocation. Carbine is a man-made substance that's a molecule thin and 1,000 times stronger than diamonds. And we use it as a metaphor, as a thin, hard substance around our clients' assets. We've now built a tool that we can model this out for clients, which was a big accomplishment, something I'd never done. I'd never built a piece of software in my life. I'd like to thank the folks on our dev team who did that, because I couldn't have done it. And we now show clients and other firms and other professionals every day how we can do a better job for their clients than using traditional bonds and bond funds.
Okay, and bonds is what I've heard of.
Right.
So I think that's a very, kind of everybody kind of just knows about that. What is a big financial myth you see when you're working with people that everyone still really believes?
That cash value life insurance is expensive. It's the biggest one. And when you compare how a death benefit performs compared to maybe the death benefit of term life insurance, that is 100% true. But it shows an incomplete understanding of what cash value life insurance is and what it should do. First of all, term insurance is a liability on a personal balance sheet. Cash value life insurance is an asset, much like your home is an asset. So when someone says, oh, it's expensive, well, they have a point, but it's really incomplete. And when we look at cash value life insurance, we actually look at it from the cash value perspective. The death benefit becomes this add-on feature that is just becomes incredibly powerful when you look at the complete package. Because if you took the same money and put it into a bond or a bond fund, okay, same, they function very similar, and then added the additional cost of having the death benefit that a cash value policy, the cash value perform value life insurance performs even better on a comparative basis. So that's the biggest myth. It's not that it's cheap or expensive. It's just how to use it properly. And I will tell you, most wealth management firms and most insurance professionals, we think get it wrong. You know, we think they are completely looking at it the wrong way. And we are trying to move that needle every day to show people how to properly do this.
Well, I think for one, just in my life experience, it's one thing to have conversations like about investments and about, things like that. Life insurance is not something that people are talking about in a regular conversation in my world. So, how do
Right.
you move the needle to even get people to have the conversation about this?
Well, Brandon, honestly, first thing I do is I come on shows like yours. I try to talk about it to as many people as often as possible as I can. I have a deal in my own personal practice, or our practice functions in two ways. One, we have a B2C business where we help individual clients, and we want to tell clients all the time about what we do. And I tell people, if you want to have coffee, breakfast, or lunch with me, or a drink, I'm happy to. Okay, dinner's reserved for clients and family and friends. But I am always happy to meet you. I am at Starbucks almost every day, and people actually know to meet me there. So it's kind of nice. I also try to tell the truth as much as possible and the objective truth. We've written a white paper about this. We encourage people to read it. We encourage people to question it. We sent it to someone the other day, and she had some harsh criticisms for it. And I really appreciated her feedback because I have tunnel vision on this. I think the world is this way. And I want people around me who are going to disagree with me and are going to try to challenge my assumptions. And what this woman did was amazing. And I really appreciate it. We've had a little back and forth since then. And what at the end of the day, our product and our strategy is going to be better as a result. So I am happy to go. I've spoken at conferences about this. You know, and we're trying to expand our network. We are trying to engage other advisors about this. And that's, you know, the hurdle on that is the traditional wealth management world focuses on the AUM, business assets under management. And that's how clients are, excuse me, that's how advisors are compensated. So, and most of those advisors claim to be fiduciaries. Now, a fiduciary should be someone who does what's in the best interest of their client, not how they're compensated. And we can prove over and over again and stress test it in multiple ways that our approach is a bet provides better outcomes to clients. So advisors should not care. They do because the government is involved in this with the DOL rules, that how they're compensated. They should be doing what's best for their clients. And that's a message we are trying to get out there. And if any advisor wants to learn how to do this, or any client wants it, please call us. We love talking about this. You know, I am a full-blown nerd, and I nerd out on this.
We love nerds, especially when they nerd out on the things that they love. So you're in good company here.
I appreciate that.
What is a pattern that you have seen through, the wealthier families that how they approach money differently than kind of everyone else?
So wealthy families have much more wealth preservation point of view. They don't feel like they have to take the same risks everyone else does. Now, those are typically the families that already have wealth. So there's a large group of people in this country who make a lot of money. And they approach a little different. They're willing to take more risk because, you know, along the way. But what we have found is that there's a moment of change in that group specifically. The moment of change is in their mid-40s to mid-50s. We call it when the kids come off the payroll. So when their kids have graduated college, They have this, they still have a lot of working years in front of them. It could be 20, 25 years of working in front of them if they want. It's easy to work into your 70s now and even longer. And they're like, oh, what do I do now? And our approach has a wonderful extra hedge against the cost of long-term care. And that is a hot button issue. So what we've done in our approach, we are still keeping our clients' assets invested. Invested is the wrong word. But are their assets liquid to them and growing while providing them an additional hedge against the cost of long-term care at no additional charge? And that's a powerful thing compared to the traditional insurance-based strategies that are out there, which some of them have proved disastrous for carriers and individuals, and some of them just have limitations in terms of asset growth or even the risk profiles they provide. So, wealthy families, extremely wealthy families, it's much more about preservation and legacy. And once again, we are doing the same thing over and over again. We're taking what we do for them and we're applying it to our individual clients. We're just doing it in a slightly different way with, maybe where the money is. Wealthy families hopefully have gifted to trusts and taken advantage of the well-established tax rules that are available to everybody. Now, the other thing that always boggles my mind is, you hear this sentence all the time. You should not buy permanent or cash value life insurance unless you need it for estate planning. My question to everyone who says that is, how is the math different? We say, show me the math. The math isn't different. Buy term and invest the difference was the way people did it, why don't people use buy term and invest the difference for estate planning if that's a better solution? It's not, because when you look at the risk-adjusted rates of return a cash value life insurance can provide you, it's incredible. Is it going to beat the markets? The equity markets, that is. No, it's not. It's not designed to. It's a fixed product. We're using fixed products. So if you want to play in that space of using, investment products like the variable universal life or for very wealthy families, private placement life insurance, we'll refer you to somebody else. It's not our expertise. It's not what we do, but we certainly have friends and colleagues who are some of the best in the business at it. So, using cash value life insurance is also the only strategy that people say wealthy people should use that other people say no one else should use. How does that make any sense in the world? If you, for instance, oh my God, my very rich friend just did this, but you shouldn't do it. Like, that makes no sense whatsoever. If it's available to you, now we don't do it for clients that don't have the assets, any assets to do it. We're not some sales organization that's trying to get everybody to do it. But like, if this strategy works for somebody else who's significantly wealthier for you than you, and you have the assets to do it, why shouldn't you do it? It's the only strategy I can think of that people say don't do it. So that, things like that drive me nuts.
I could see that. I'm very curious, Keith, because you are passionate about this. And when I think about a job like in life insurance, I think, like, how do you get into that? Number one, how did you get into it? And then to be passionate about it to where, this matters and I could tell that you care about people making smart decisions.
I really appreciate that question. So I started my career actually as a research analyst. So I had the analytical tools that I needed when I got into wealth management. And I got into wealth management because I worked in a family business that kind of failed. And I needed a job. It was actually out of necessity. And when I went to the first firm, because I was a research analyst and had been a Fed watcher, I knew more about the markets than most people in the office. I can still do a decent job of predicting what the Fed's going to do. Not great at it, but
Decent.
we have a new Fed chair this week, or he had his first meeting this week. I don't know him that well, but like I'm still pretty good at it. And so the thing that I've tried to do is I have empathy for other people. And I try to take that empathy and apply it to how do I want me and my family to be treated? And how should financial services treat me and my family? That's my dad, my mom, my wife, my kids, anybody, and also my friends. A lot of my clients are people who live in my community. I want to have the best reputation possible because at the end of the day, I actually can't use different products than anybody else. So the thing that sets us apart are the values that we bring. So, getting back into this necessity and then going back to that story of 08 and having been at a Guardian agency, Guardian is a wonderful company. They're mutually owned, so the policyholders own the company. Watching how they stood tall when the world was literally melting, and we've seen that from other carriers too. There were actually a few life insurance carriers that took bailout TARP money. Okay. MetLife did because they owned a bank at the time. The Hartford did. AIG did, but it was really because of their financial products division. But most of the other life insurance did not touch TARP. They didn't need to. They were incredibly financially strong. And that said so much to me. It really spoke to me of like being the guy or the woman who's there when things go really bad. And the other part of our strategy is that when things go really bad in the markets, our strategies do not go down in value. So imagine your portfolio has dropped 40%, like the equity markets did. And in 08, bond markets dropped too. So where were you going for money? Where were you going for money to pay for your kids' college, which is a true story in our practice that a client had to start paying for a client's college, their child's college education, and their 529 plan, which they thought was safe because it had gone to
Bulletproof.
bonds, still dropped in value. Well, we advised him to go to his cash value life insurance policy, take the money from there the first year. And that was great because the markets the next year actually roared back. His 529 recovered and he was able to pay for his kids' college. So this discussion surrounding life insurance and does it have fees in it? Yeah, it's got fees in it. All right. I can't get rid of the fees. We can disclose them to clients. We do our best to disclose them to clients. We also are trans. So, as a firm, the values we bring are transparency and ethics, okay? So, and independence. So, we are not dedicated to any one insurance carrier. There are about 8 to 12 insurance carriers that we work with. They have to meet our standards, not we don't have to meet theirs. And clients at the end of the day choose what carrier they go with when they work with us. We're also transparent in terms of our compensation. Our clients see how much we make. And sometimes carriers will pay us different amounts. So our clients see that. So they understand our recommendations are where they're coming from. If we're recommending a carrier A, I'm not going to pick on a carrier right now, carrier A that's maybe paying us $10,000 more than carrier B, our clients should know that. And that type of stuff does happen. All right. But we put it in the client's hands to understand, and they get to choose. Now, in 22 years in the business, and I think 16 years of disclosing compensation, I've had two clients care. So I got into this business out of necessity. I found that I liked it because we were the guards. We're the ones who stood tall when things went really bad. And that meant something to me. Now, people don't remember that because 2008 was actually now almost, it's almost 20 years ago, which is amazing to me. But I've been in the business that long. And, just in my personal practice, that means a lot to me. So anybody can get in this business. You don't need a special set of skills. To work for us, you do have to pass some ethics things, actually, because we want people to behave in a certain way.
Of course.
But you don't have to have one degree or another. You can be liberal arts, you can work in English, have an English degree. We want you to be social, though. We want you to be able to out and talk to people, which is actually a fun part of our job. We want you to have empathy. Like, we've gotten a lot of bad phone calls over the years. I'm getting divorced, so and so passed away. Like, these are not fun phone calls. And you have to be able to, like the carriers, be the strong one when things go bad. And
Be able to,
that fits my personal personality. And we look for others who do that as well. And I think you'll find in the industry, even in the overall wealth management industry, people are inherently compassionate. Wow, I just rambled a lot. I forgive
No, I
me.
love that. There is a lot. This is the part where I'm like, man, I wish I'd have taken notes because I had a few questions come up. But I think, this what you're kind of talking about with that empathy just brings me to another thought that I had about how emotions affect financial success and can ultimately threaten that. So can you speak a little bit about that and your perspective when you're working with people?
Sure. So the biggest thing is that most people hear life insurance and they feel expense, because the word insurance is in it.
Of course.
And they feel they're afraid of behavioral economics is also another little thing that I love to explore. So they feel expense. It's the emotion they get. And if it's an expense, I'm going to get taken advantage of, like buying a car. And how do I avoid all those things? And we get the list of ChatGPT questions all the time. We know when that list has come generated by AI. It's great. I'm pretty good at like having those hammered back out, because you could see they also always come in almost the same order. And it's fine. We are completely comfortable with clients asking us those questions, but you can see the visceral response, because there is really no other type of insurance that is an asset. So people think, going back to that question of expensive or cheap, that that's how they should be shopping for it. That's not how we view it. We view it as an allocation. All right. So we're trying to get people away from, we never say, when people come to us and ask, how much does it cost? We don't answer that question. That's not a question that we answer. We answer is, how much are we going to allocate to it? And that's a big behavioral change that we are trying to implement. Because if I could take those same assets and make them more productive for you, and then add this wonderful thing of legacy planning and income protection, I've done a great job for your family. And getting people to make that change, when also everyone else in the media, this not to pick on Susie Orman or Dave Ramsey, but they are term insurance proponents, and I understand their position, but it's just not the position we come from. We are oriented differently, and we are working to reorient everyone else. We'll never get there, but I do have my soapbox, and I'm trying to get on it as much as possible and talk about it.
No, I think that's great. And you mentioned a second ago just about like insurance, people think cost right away. And I think, Keith, and I work with a lot of entrepreneurs. I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs. They're not coming from wealth. They're literally ground up building it. And, a lot of them don't have financial awareness. I literally didn't know anything about an IRA until about 3 years ago. And I'm almost 50, so it's coming from that perspective, you've got a lot of people who insurance is a dirty word. It's a dirty word because, there's so much red tape. Look how many people lose their house to, nature and a flood, and insurance has this cute little escape hatch where, like, you're kind of screwed or,
And a lot of, I agree, a lot of other insurance has been, look at health insurance. And also home, like, and here's another thing, going back to wealthy families and non-wealthy families who don't have money. Wealthy families pay a lot more for homeowners insurance.
Yes.
All right. A lot more. Not because their houses are just bigger, because they are paying for additional services in those policy. They're actually called terms and conditions. And why do they do that? Because when something bad happens, that carrier is going to pay. So I'll share with you a personal story. My home was destroyed during Hurricane Sandy. I had a very good insurance company. I was back in my home, in a brand new, beautiful home, within 9 months. My insurance carrier was amazing. Now, I pay more for my homeowner's insurance than almost everyone I know. Why? Because I get more. My friend, who had a fire about 3 months after my tragedy, a year later, they still hadn't started construction. Why? And it was a big name brand insurance company, because the insurance company is keeping money on the float, and they're trying to not pay claims. And that's also why the insurance industry has a bad reputation.
Right.
And so this is something else we learned, and this is really important: the incentives of the insurance companies. So we like to use companies that are what are called mutually owned. They are owned by the policyholders. There are a lot of life insurance companies that are US public companies or backed by private equity. When those, and none of them are inherently evil, but their incentives are to reward those shareholders and those investors, not to take care of their policyholders. So when you use a mutual carrier, their incentives are to reward their policyholders. And that's important to us so that the values are aligned in terms of how the company is run. And that's not to say the public companies don't do a good job. Some of them do.
Yeah.
All right. But I will tell you, in 08, going back to that awful situation, there was an insurance carrier who will remain nameless, but
Yeah.
there was a debate in the boardroom whether to pay dividends to policyholders or dividends to stockholders. Now, they paid both to their credit. But when you use a mutual carrier, that debate doesn't exist. They're taking care of their policyholders because you are the owners of the company. And that's another part of our process that gets overlooked. Yes, financial strength is incredibly important, but so is ownership structure. You know, and in the insurance world, this is important. And there are good insurance companies out there that are mutually owned. Like my homeowners insurance company is a mutually owned insurance company, and they took such good care of me.
Yeah.
You know, and so paying attention to these things, not always shopping on cost, is really important.
Right. And I think that's kind of people that aren't born into wealth, that's kind of how it starts, right? I've done it looking for the cheapest insurance, and now even we
Right.
just moved our homeowners. It's definitely a conversation worth having and researching and speaking to someone like you who's willing to tell the
Right.
truth about it, you know, about
And
what's important.
just, you know, we don't sell homeowners or auto insurance,
Right, right,
but
right.
we have a philosophy for our clients. It's important. It's part of their overall risk profile. And we will tell them, like, we have a firm that we refer to for that stuff, but we will tell them, spend more money. It's okay. God forbid something happened. Like, let's hope nothing ever happens. You know, let's pray you don't have a tragedy.
Right.
Okay. And my home was literally destroyed. A tree cut my house in half, a giant tree. All right. When we bought the house, you know, the tree was, we bought the house partially because of these trees. That we have these two giant trees in the backyard. And then one of them decided, and my son even named the trees. Okay. They were
That's
called
cute.
Bumpy and Softy Tree. You know, leave it to a 2-year-old to do something like that.
Absolutely.
But one of them rolled over and cut our house in half. And we're just fortunate that no one was hurt. And we eventually got a new house out of it. So paying attention to these things are important. Price is not the only concern. Now, that's not to say people who can't afford it should be stretching to do this. I'm not advocating for that.
Right.
You know, I'm not advocating for anyone to do anything they can't afford. You know,
Of course. And I
so.
think, you know, I can tell financial security matters to you for people to have that. Just speaking to my audience right now, how does financial security affect other areas of life?
Well, so people having life insurance and disability insurance actually experience, a friend of mine actually did research on this and I can send it to you, on how it makes you feel more secure. Now, with our strategy in Carbine, it actually provides security to your assets as well. So like when the markets tank, we're that great solution. So it actually, the research shows it helps you sleep better at night. I remember my first year in the business. I got my life insurance and my disability insurance. I never had it before. I was just getting married, or maybe I was just married. I can't remember when the policy actually came through. And I play basketball. I still play basketball. And I showed up to my basketball game and I was like, you know what? I don't get hurt if I get hurt. I have my disability insurance.
Yeah.
Okay. And it made me feel more secure. It really did. You know, something bad happens, I was protected. Now, not everybody shares my philosophy, and I understand that. But if something bad happens to me, I know that my family will be okay.
Right.
And that's what we try to do for our clients. And with Carbine and what we've done there, we are extending that to their assets as well.
I think that's amazing. How can people find the carbine allocation? How can they get resourced with you if they're not local and they don't hang out at
Sure.
Starbucks?
I give out my phone number to everyone, and anybody can call me. It's 212-380-8676. Carbine Allocation has its own website. It's carbineallocation.co, not .com. I did just get .com. I haven't set it up yet. Someone released it, which is pretty cool. And our firm website is fbostrategies.com. And we're happy to help anyone. We feel it's important whether you actually become a client. If we can help you a little bit, I think it's the concept of karma, putting a little positive energy into the world and helping somebody. It's great. We love doing that. Of course, we're happy to make money and do our jobs, but helping someone really feels good, and that's okay. We like doing that.
I love that.
So, Brendan, I love your, what you're trying to do here. And this is something, a word for, we are involved with an entrepreneur group
Okay.
that we help support. It's run by a client of ours, and offline, I'm happy to talk to you about it. But one thing we learned about entrepreneurs, first of all, they're amazing. So I'm going to say two things. So I find them amazing. And I consider myself one, and I've learned so much from spending time with them in this community. And I don't think Carbine would exist without me spending time with them in their community. They spend too much time working on their business and do not pay attention to their personal finances. They need to carve out time on, let's just say, a monthly basis. Put it on their calendar. I am going to take 2 hours this month, just 2 hours, and do this. And I understand why they don't. I really do. But it's the big, I've been working in this community for about 4 or 5 years now, and it's the biggest thing we see. And even some of these entrepreneurs are very successful, and they're just so in their business. They can't see beyond it. And I get it. It's amazing. But some of these people have had exits, which is amazing. I play no part in that. Like, I've never raised money. I don't do any of that. But they're ill prepared for the exit.
Right.
And there are things that we can do to help them to make it more tax efficient, to better protect their assets, protect their family, transfer wealth. There's all these things. And if they literally just spent a little time, and I know how hard it is, but to any entrepreneur out there, any business owner out there, make the time, put it on your calendar. When you block time, block a little for personal finances. Because first of all, it's going to relate to your business finances, and there are things that we can do with business dollars to help you. So, and it'll help your business. We're working on a very large case. It's a business succession case that every part of it is good. The company's getting a better return. We're solving a business succession issue. In this way, God forbid something happens prematurely, someone's going to get paid. In the event that this person retires, they're just going to get a supplemental retirement plan. Or they're going to get their, they're going to, there's a fund for their buyout. So that's a very common thing. So if I could leave you guys with anything, is take a minute. Pay attention to your personal finances. Not, you don't have to like do everything. You can outsource it, but like take a minute out of your business and pay attention to it.
I think that is great. Great advice. And I think it is exactly like you said, a lot of people are not doing it. And it's important. It's new to me, and it's been
Yeah.
important to me, and it's changed how my brain works and how I even just the relationship with money, right? But yeah, I think
You did ask me this question before. I didn't fully answer it. One thing that having your finances in order does, it gives you freedom.
Oh, yeah.
And it gives you freedom to make choices. And it's actually amazing. That is one of the most powerful things that money can give you. It gives you freedom to spend more time with your children or your spouse or your family or travel or whatever choice you want to make about it. And having that security does that. So Scott Galloway is one of my favorite podcasters. No offense, Brandon,
That's
but
fair.
Scott is great. And he brings up this research all the time, is that I'm gonna botch the numbers, but like having up to $10 million creates immense happiness. But past that, the marginal happiness is really small. And I'm not saying people shouldn't earn more than $10 million. God bless you. Please do. It's just that, and 10 million just seems to be that security number. You feel secure. And not everybody does. Of course, there are exceptions, but you feel secure. You feel like you could do what you want to do. And that's the issue. That's what money can bring you. All right. And it can also bring you know, there's a huge change in the economy. I don't know if you saw the other day that designer handbag sales are down 10%, which are like the Birkins and the Chanels. I listen to economic indicators all the time, going back to the nerd in me. And what are people doing? They're buying experiences. The super high-end hotel is super popular right now. Right. They're buying the experience. And, that's something I like. I don't own a lot of things, but
Like the
I would
experience.
go on trips and spend time with my family. Father's Day is coming up this week. I ask my kids for nothing except for to spend the day with me. We are going to this amusement park we like, and it's just the day together. So I think, that's what money buys. Money buys that choice and that ability. And it's okay to not have it and be striving for it. It's okay to fail. One lesson we always like to, this is from a movie, and I can't remember the exact line, but you don't fail until you stop giving up. So, or
That's
something
good.
like that, where you only fail when you stop giving up, when you
When you
give
give
up,
up, you
right?
don't ever
You only
try
fail when
again.
you give up. So it's okay to fail. And just so you know, back to the entrepreneurships, the entrepreneurs, we learn by failing. And I will give a shout out to one of my mentors. His name is Lewis Schiff. He runs the entrepreneurship group called Birthing of Giants. And they're amazing. And you talk about failure there, and it's powerful. And we don't, our wins come from our failures. They don't come from our successes. So I always like to remember that. And it could be anything. So it could be personal, it could be professional. It's okay to fail.
And I think that's a great message because that kind of is what this show encompasses of like very successful people had a lot of mess behind what it looks like. And I think
Oh, yeah, that's
there's
great.
such a curated space on like Instagram where we think this is what means we've made it. And behind that curated
Right.
space, nobody's talking about how many times they got knocked down. Nobody's talking
Right.
about how many times, they failed. But I do think that's amazing. Keith, we are coming up on our time. So this is the part
Yes.
of the show where I'm going to tell you what I think makes you special. And
Thanks.
it's not that you understand money, because a lot of people understand it, right? What I think makes you special is that you're willing to challenge conventional thinking. You looked at a system that absolutely most everybody simply just accepted, and you asked the better questions. You searched for what actually works, and instead of following the crowd, you followed data. And now the fact that you're helping people think beyond their fear. Beyond the headlines and beyond the financial trends, you're helping them build that stability and security and the confidence for their families. I'm all about legacy building, and I think this is an incredible key to that experience for people. And to everyone listening, money isn't everything, but stress about money affects almost everything. It affects your peace, your choices, your opportunities, your family. The goal isn't just to earn more. The goal is to become a wise steward of what you have been given. Ask better questions, challenge the assumptions, learn the rules of the game. Please remember, financial freedom isn't built overnight. It is built through intentional decisions and conversations with people like Keith. So I'm saying be intentional and remember that your mess is your message. Even the financial mistakes, and they happen, even the setbacks, we've all been there, even the seasons where you felt behind, the lesson may become the wisdom that can change your future. So if this episode spoke to you, please share it out. If you have more questions, please get resourced at the website here in the link, or I mean, call Keith if you're local, find his Starbucks. You know where to find him now. And if you guys are in ready for the hot seat, I dare you to come tell me why you're special. Keith, thank you so much for speaking to my audience today.
Thank you so much, Brandon. This was lovely.